Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. Then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me. And walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yada. You know, I finally saw one. I looked all season for it, and I saw one just yesterday. The bumper sticker. The ultimate bumper sticker. Keep Christ in Christmas.
And that's okay. Christ has nothing to do with me, so keep him in Christmas.
You might as well, yeah, you might as well keep Christ in Christmas because there is no Christ. And a mass is the things that the pagan Romans celebrated.
The mass of cakes.
Now, folks, for somebody who is so unbelievably naive, totally and completely ignorant, wholly irrational, to view Christmas as a religious holiday that is somehow pleasing to God, that buy into all of the hymns that make it sound like God was really born, the Christian God has a goddamn birthday. The Christian God was capable of being a little baby. That the totality of God fit into that little infant that was dependent on its mother. That God was born. Oh, and of course, the Christian God dies, too. That's why the symbol of Christianity is a dead God on a stick. Yes, it really doesn't have a title. It doesn't have a title. The term Messiah, which was transliterated Messiah, because there isn't a Christian in the world that understands that Hallelujah and Messiah actually have Yahweh's name in them. Mm-hmm. But the Messiah, which is the implement of Yah, the one set apart to do the work of Yah, isn't that title? It was used 22 times in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms as a name. But when Messiah is used as in reference to the work that will be done by the one who will be cut off but not for himself, it's an adjective. Do you think that an adjective is a title?
No. It's an attribute. You can say this is an attribute of someone.
It's an attribute. It's not a title. Yeah. You know, it's like Caesar. Caesar is not a title. It means hairy. Julius was hairy to become Julius Caesar. And if you're going to recognize that he had a title, and he had Hebrew attributes, he had a Hebrew name, his name was Yosha. which means Yah was saved. If you don't know his name, you haven't a clue as to who he is, who he was, what he did. But if you're going to give him a title, give him a Hebrew title. Don't give him a transliteration of a Greek title and then pretend the title is a name as in Christ. It's not a name. And if it were a title, you'd have to put the definite article before it. The president or the king. You know, it's... So if it's a title, where's your definite article? And why in the world are you so stupid that you think he had a Greek title? Did he ever speak Greek? No. Did he ever travel to Greece? No. Did he ever speak of the Greeks? No. Other than to call Greece one of the five beasts of human history. Did he speak Latin? No. Did he ever go to Rome? Only references to Rome were to speak of the Roman Catholic Church and Imperial Rome as two of the five beasts that would align with Satan to harm humankind. So, there is no Christ. A mass is a pagan concept. The basis of Christo in Greek anyway means to apply drugs. God is infinite. He was, he is, he always will be. He was not born. And the totality of God most certainly will not fit in this universe, much less fit on this planet, much less fit in a human body, much less in an infant baby. The concept is so stupid. It begs the question, why do 2.5 billion people buy into such rot? Because that's what it is. And then I will hear, oh, how many times have I heard it this season? But that's not what it means to me. Yeah, you can tell me it's a pagan holiday. Yeah, you can tell me it's got nothing to do with anything that you'd find in the Bible. But it's not what it means to me. It's a wonderful time. It gives me great feelings. I love it when everybody gets together. The exchange of presents is so wonderful. And God's told us what he thinks of it. He thinks it's an abomination. He thinks it's really stupid. If you think it's not an abomination, you think it's not really stupid, then you've got a disagreement with God. And if you're trying to piss God off, go celebrate it. If you'd like the opportunity to know him, it's a really bad idea to embrace something, to celebrate something that he thinks is revolting. And I guess the worst of all is to think that by celebrating Christmas, the true spirit of Christmas, that you're pleasing God and you're encouraging others to do it. I think that's the worst of all. Yeah. You know, the concept was really quite simple in pagan lore, and there are a lot of common denominators in the pagan lore. You know, almost every pagan religion, all the large ones, had a trinity, just as does Christianity. Almost all had the Son of the Son. The Son was the principal God, so it was always the Son of God. There was always a Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, Madonna, and Child, on all of them. There was always God the Father, and there was always the Son. The Son always died, and he always was resurrected in every pagan religious myth. In fact, if you were to study Dionysus, you'd have almost a perfect understanding of the Christian Jesus. They're died and they're resurrected. They always die right around the time of Easter. They're always conceived right around the time of Easter. 9 months after Easter Sunday, what occurs? Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think that's maybe just a hint that this is all about sun god worship? And Christmas isn't that the, at least it was, it's the 22nd now, back in that day it was the 25th. Mm-hmm. Was the winter solstice the shorter days of the year? Is the day that after that date the days began to grow longer? It was considered the rebirth of the sun. So, that's the birth of the son of the sun. It's all based on a pagan calendar. The spring equinox is when every pagan religion has the sun impregnated by the earth, so that 9 months later the son of the sun can be born. That's it. There is no reference whatsoever to Christmas, even in the God-forsaken Christian New Testament. To whatever degree it is plausible, and there really is no credibility to anything written in the Christian New Testament, because there are more discrepancies than there are words, and huge swaths of it are a plague. God condemns the author as being the most deadly soul in all of human history. That would be Paul's letters. Mm-hmm. But if you're to believe any of it, and belief is the only term you can apply to it. You know, I had a better person come to me today and say, my mom wants to know, do you believe in Kabbalah? What is your belief about Kabbalah? And I said, I don't use the word belief. I either know or I don't know. I either understand or I don't understand. There is no belief. The moment someone uses believe, then you know that they do not know. You would only use belief. You would only turn to faith if you do not know. Once you know, there's no reason to believe. No reason for faith. You either know or you don't know. You either understand or you don't understand. Now, as it relates to that question, of course, I know that Kabbalah is rabbinic mysticism, and that it has overt satanic overtures. But so does Christianity. So does Islam. I don't think Kabbalah is any worse than Islam or Christianity. But to say something is nothing worse than things that are overtly satanic, that's a real problem. Mm-hmm. But if you can believe, and again, that's the only term that I can use as it relates to the Christian New Testament, because you cannot know, because the evidence is way too sketchy. It mentions the shepherds in their fields, and it was cold. Mm-hmm. Well, the time that Yosha's earthly parents, Joseph and Mary, would have come to Jerusalem for the express purpose of observing Sukkah is, of course, the 15th day of the 7th month, with the first month beginning in March. We're talking about early October on the pagan calendar. Not December, it would. Right. And that's when he would have arrived. And that's when they would have gone in and hung out in a temporary shelter in Jerusalem. That's when they would have made the short little sojourn from Bethlehem to Jerusalem. They were observing Sukkah. Not some pagan holiday on the winter solstice called Christmas. It is truly astonishing that people would extrapolate from there and, Holy Night and Old Little Town of Bethlehem, and it goes on and on.
Yeah. If you were going to collect taxes from people, wouldn't you collect them at the end of the fall when the harvest was over? And take their product. I mean, would you wait?
Oh, yeah, and I can take it out of the dead of winter when they have the least reserves.
Too, for one thing, yeah.
You
take when they bring in the harvest.
You know, the Romans were a lot of things. Evil.
Stupid.
Brutal. But when it came to taxing people, they were really good at that. They were really good at a lot of bad things. And one of the things they were really good about is taxing people. And you know the easiest way to tax people is when they congregate.
Yeah.
And so since
round them up.
Israelites congregate in Jerusalem where the Romans had their headquarters in the province of Yehuda around Sukkah, and that's the only time that they congregate in Jerusalem is at Sukkah. When do you think they would collect the taxes?
I think it'd be right then.
Yeah, but it's also the census was connected at the same time. You take a census when the people are easiest to count. When they congregate, they're really easy to count. And that's, of course, the New Testament verification of the time. I've said it 1,000 times, and I'm going to say it again. You don't need a New Testament. As a matter of fact, I think the New Testament is mostly counterproductive. Yeah, there's things that I have learned from and that I like in the disciple Matanyahu's account. I'm glad we have it. There are a few things that are helpful in Yahoo Commons account. Glad we have it.
Yes.
There are some insights that are a bit helpful trying to understand Daniel and Zechariah and the revelation that was brought to Yahoo Commons.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, too.
Sure.
The rest of it? Ah.
Well, it does.
I think we'd be better off without it. I think the world would be better off without it. That's why I don't think there is a Hebrew copy. I don't think Yahweh intended for us to have it. You know, we don't need to know that Yahusha fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuah. We really don't. Yahweh promised that he was going to do it, and he promised he was going to do it in this way. And he had Dode give us an eyewitness account of precisely what was going to occur and when it was going to occur.
But what do you want?
So there's no value in it other than to create a goddamn religion with its foremost holiday celebrated just 4 days from today, right?
Yeah. That's Tuesday, I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not on my radar. I have to look.
No, it's not. It's still December 25th, right? Today is the 21st. Yeah. 4 days from today.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question.
Oh, goodness. So,
if Yahusha is his name, does he need a title?
No.
Because Yahusha
means... I mean, Yahusha is a description. It's a mission statement.
Written title right
there. Yeah, it's a statement of purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's an identifier. Means Yahweh saves.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got the name Yahweh saves, why do you need a title?
Yeah.
Was that 222 times that the name Yahusha is written out in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms?
Yeah.
It's like the book we're studying, Yahusha Yah, is simply Yahusha reversed.
Yeah. Same thing, yeah.
Yahweh saves. It's saving by Yahweh. Salvation is from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Before we rejoin at Yeshayah 4:5, you followed up on a challenge that I laid out when I wrote the chapter. I said, time and again, we find that God is a proponent of righteous indignation. You know, the Christian God's not all loving. I mean, the Christian God is all loving. The real God is not. because the real God is real. And anything, any being that is all-loving is fake.
Mm-hmm.
So time and again, we find that God is a proponent of righteousness and negation. He sets an example we'd be wise to follow. Hate is a virtue when properly directed. God is rightfully angry with the religious because they have caused billions to die unnecessarily. So, should you be interested in learning more about the Ruach Ka'ar, this role is presented in Hosea 13, 2 and 3, and again in Yonah 1, 11 through 13. So you looked them up, didn't you?
I did.
Now, what'd you find?
Well, I did a down and dirty translation, but it was interesting that when you look up the words, basically it says, now they sin more and more. This is Hosea. Now they sin more and more, and they make for themselves cast images, skillfully made from the silver. All of them works of craftsmen. People say of them, let the men who offer human sacrifice kiss the calves. Therefore, he says, the consequence, they will be like the morning mist, like the early dew. They will vanish like chaff blown from the threshing floor and like smoke through the open windows. Now, it's pretty self-explanatory. He obviously hates religion with a passion. And he says these people
with a passion.
And those who promote it will not survive. And
in religious imagery.
Right. Uh-huh. Religious imagery. Which is... I don't know how much plainer you could be, but I mean you cannot.
Yeah, and particularly since he's using the metaphor of grain and chaff.
Yes.
The grain is useful. The chaff is dried up and blown
up
by the wind.
And it blows away. Yeah.
The fire is useful. Smoke is irritating. And
you know,
the fire is useful. Light, warmth, cooking, purification, but the smoke. Look, doesn't anything but irritate your eyes. Wonderful metaphors.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you can even get a little deeper than that. If you were looking at, for instance, the part where it says Goren, which is Goren would be the threshing floor. That was interesting because I have these different programs, and when I look up these words, they will also give me where it's used in a lot of places. And this one, it sent me to 2 Samuel 24:16, where it says, "Was the threshing floor of the Jebusite." So he's
right.
Going to reference there.
Which the Yabusi. Right, the Yabusi.
The Bushi.
Yeah, when Dode was directed as to where to... established the foundation for Yahweh's home, it's called the temple.
Mm-hmm.
He bought it from a Yabusi, and the Yabusi that owned it was using it as his threshing floor.
Mm-hmm.
And what a threshing floor is where you grind the grain, you put the grain under friction and pressure with stones. And based upon grinding it, you're able to separate the usable kernel from the chaff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yahweh chose as a metaphor for the foundation of his home that which separates.
Yeah.
The useful part of the grain from the chaff. And he's used it in this metaphor against religion. But yeah, it's all about separation. It's and that separation between the grain and the chaff isn't easy. Grain's crushed. You know, if you're going to turn grapes into wine, what do you have to do?
You have to crush them, of course.
Crush them. Exactly.
Yeah. No,
what if you want to make olive oil? What do you have to do to the olives?
I have to crush that as well. Absolutely.
Right.
I had a bunch of olive trees once there. They're a mess, but but that's how you do them.
Yeah.
I mean, you squeeze them.
So are there any things that are more important symbols to Yahweh than olive oil, grain, and wine? And all three have a common denominator. The harvest must be crushed, ground,
separated.
In an act of separation. And that's where his home is. And so it is a real interesting statement. You know, Yashayah, from beginning to end, really is righteous indignation. There are a lot of uplifting statements, but they're sandwiched between a whole litany of righteous indignation. You know, I don't think there's even one that could come close to, you know, Yashayah finally arriving in Yahweh's home in the seventh dimension. And the door is open, and he sees and hears the sorrow in Yahweh. Yeah. That there he has opened the door to his home, and there's no one. That's the whole one. Yashayah takes it upon himself. He takes it hard, and he says, you know, he thinks that, well, there's no one at the door to Yahweh's home because he has somehow failed to communicate the message effectively. You know, sometimes we all blame ourselves that, you know, if we could only do a better job, there'd be more people there. How would anyone do a better job than Yashayah? He was speaking Yahweh's words himself. I mean, Yahweh spoke through him. How could you do a better job than Yashayah?
Yeah, impossible.
Because that's, he's simply a conduit for Yahweh, and there was no one there. And then Yahweh constantly, throughout the whole prophecy of Yashayah, says, I searched, but I could find no one.
No one to work with for how many years?
No one to work with. I mean, you know, he approached us, and we said yes. And you know, there's this, I think anyone listening would have this perception of, well, that means that you're really bragging. You must be somebody special that God chose you. No. It was simply by default. There was no one else. For 2,700 years, there was no one who was willing. I mean, being willing doesn't make you special. It just means you're willing. But it's just astonishing that this could go on. So, yeah, it's into righteous indignation. And so you turn to Hosea 13, 2 and 3, and God used the metaphor of separation and used two examples of that which is valuable, fire and grain, mm-hmm. to describe the consequence of being associated with religious. If you are religious, if you're going to go celebrate Christmas, then your soul is going to be blown away like the chaff. It's going to be consumed in the fire.
Yeah.
It will dry up, wither, and cease to exist. Did you pursue Yonah?
Yeah, well, I certainly read it. I didn't get a chance to get a lot of breakdown on it. But, you know, as he says now, the sea was... it's the story, obviously, of Yonah. He's on the boat. On the ship, and he's now, as the sea was going worse and worse, and that's when you have SAR. So we know it's a hurricane or it's a raging wind of immense proportions. You know, and they said they want to, they say to Yonah, what must we do to calm down the sea? And he says, pick me up and cast me into the sea, and that it may quiet down for you, for I know that for this violent storm, I know of this violent storm that's come upon you. So he knew why. He knew what it was.
Yeah.
He wasn't talking about the storm. It was the set apart spirit causing this. It was the spirit of Yahweh causing mm-hmm. this in a violent rage. So you know, he didn't want to do this thing. That's why he was on that ship.
But you know, how many times have you, Kirk? I know I have. You know, I remember I had that systemic poison IV. Man, that was put me out for 2 weeks. I had my knee that went out and couldn't exercise. I was in such pain, couldn't hardly walk. You know, I probably had a lot fewer ailments than most people, so I'm not really complaining. But you know, I've had mine, and then, you know, I had people really abuse me in a business that I owned and destroyed and then blame me, so I appeared on a cover of a national magazine with a feature article that didn't get anything right. You know, I've had my share of public humiliation, my share of aches and pains, and they go on. And I really think, struggling with some things now, my life is really fulfilling, but there's also some real challenges. Mm-hmm. And part of it is that threshing floor. Some of it's the wine press, the olive press. Some of it's the turbulent storm of Yonah.
That's a fair analogy.
You know, some of it's the famine that Abraham endured and having to go into Egypt and come back. You know, it's overcoming challenges that build character. And if you don't put your body under stress, your muscles atrophy. You can't stand up, much less walk. You don't have the stamina for camping out and hiking and doing anything that's adventurous. I'm going to tell you, if you don't use your mind,
mm-hmm.
you lose it. And I think that's a significant part of what's being conveyed here.
Yeah.
It is really, really important for us to be stressed. All of these characters were stressed. You don't think that Yeshua was stressed? I want to tell you. Can you imagine a guy that was more stressed than Dode?
No, he had been coddled. Half of his life before he became
the
leader of
Israel. If he had been coddled, do you think he would have had the character to take the stand he did?
Well, you know,
he's courage to do it.
Solomon, he said, that's the trouble. He's too soft.
Right. That's exactly what he said. So I think what you're seeing in Yonah with that term is something that's really important for us to recognize, that there's virtue in work and toil and struggle and overcoming and challenges. They're the things that reveal our character, that build our character, that make us, equip us really to be interesting companions, capable companions in eternity. Keep us from being those who give up at the first sign that something gets tough.
Yeah. Well, you know, even at this verse even ends with that on the because the sea just rages more and more. They roll against it. They can't do anything about it. You know, and that's when he is off the boat after that. So it gets worse, and that's where they start. And that's when it just gets worse and worse and worse. So, but he does survive this and go on.
Did he get crippled in the process?
No.
Did he get blinded?
I'm sorry?
Did he get blinded?
No. No.
Was there any indication
that he was Muhammad? No. None of those things.
Was he tortured?
He walks better. He walks on the sand and walks off to the shore and delivers.
Right, he does, doesn't he? Right.
Yeah, he does. And he's a strong and better man for it.
Yes, he is. That he effectively conveyed the message he had been tasked with conveying, didn't he?
Yeah. So you're saying that the Ruach Kar, we know it's a raging wind. We know it's a difficult time, a wind, if you want. But it's the righteous thing in the nation, but it is the strength that sure separates you. Is that fair to say?
Right. Do you think that grinding stone of a threshing floor is soft?
Hardly.
No. Do you think that you're going to successfully press olives with a feather?
Hmm.
What if you throw flowers at grapes? Are you going to get wine?
Only in San Francisco where they draw that.
Yeah, son. So, you know, it's all in this misconception of God, you know. the Christian preacher that's looking for donations is going to say, you know, if you want the blessings and not this, and get out of the struggle and the darkness of challenges, you just got to make a donation, and I'll be right with God. You're just not giving enough. If you give enough, it'll all be better.
No, it's...
You think that Yosha didn't struggle?
Mightily.
Yeah. Mightily.
How do you get the concept, not you personally, but how do they keep getting the concept that Yahweh is not allowed to be really angry and hate religion to take his children away?
Can you imagine what kind of character God would have to have to create this universe? Right. To create this universe and to conceive life and to convey his nature to his creation, invite his creation to engage in a relationship with him, do everything that was conceivable at great personal cost to facilitate his creation's ability to engage in a relationship with him and be empowered by him, to offer the greatest benefits the human being could ever imagine: immorality, perfection, adoption into God's personal family, enrichment and empowerment. Offer all of that to us. And not only does 99.99999% of humanity thumb their nose at God and say, hell no, I'm not going to do that. I've got to celebrate Passover, be part of some covenant. I'm not going to celebrate Yom Kippurim. I'm not going to camp out on Sukkah. I'm going to celebrate Easter and Christmas. I'm not going to observe the Shabbat. I'm going to pray on Friday and Sunday. Now, I'm not going to have you lift me up. I'm going to get on my knees and worship you. I mean,
now that's a strange.
With all of that being the antithesis of what he wanted, and then to kill and to imprison and to torture in the name of those false diatribes. If God didn't hate those people, then he's not
being with him.
Not loving.
No.
Then he's a rotten father.
Exactly.
He is a creator that doesn't care. Not worth knowing. Of course he has to hate. That's why hate is a virtue. He's got to know what to hate. And so many people want to promote kindness. God's not kind. He loves the few who know him, have chosen him. And he doesn't know and doesn't even care about 99.999% of humanity and the fraction of 1% that lead people away from him, that distort his message. He hates them.
Mm-hmm.
All the religious, all the political.
Yeah.
So this was the passage that we had ended our program on a week ago. It says, then Yahweh will create, initiating something cutting edge. Every location and dwelling place along the ridgeline of Zion, as well as over her Mikra, by way of a cloud, by the smoke and by the brilliant shining radiance of majestic light, of a flaming fire by night. For indeed upon all this manifestation of power and glory will be a sheltering canopy. You know, there's a lot of folks out there that think that their Messiah cannot return until they knock down the Dome of the Holy Front, Dome of the Rock, and
rebuild the temple. Rebuild the temple. Yeah.
Well, that's not what this says. They'll say, oh, wow, you know, the Lord is waiting for the faithful to build him a temple. Doesn't say that, does it?
knows of that. It's quite comical. Thank
you. Yeah, it's Yanoa Barra.
Yeah.
Yeah, bar, is bara not the same word that Yahweh uses in the creation account? Isn't the creation account called the creation account because it's based on the Hebrew word bara? And then Yahweh bara created the spiritual realm and the physical realm, physical universe, bara? Well, if he used bara to describe creating a six-dimensional universe, and then his home in the seventh dimension, and he used bara to describe that, don't you think maybe if he's talking about something as small as the ridge line of Zion, which is Mount Moriah,
mm-hmm.
that he might be capable of building his own house and all the other apparatus that's going to be symbolic of his covenant and his nature and his and everything else that's important to him right along that ridge line. If he built the entire universe using the verb bara, don't you think that maybe when he uses bara here, that he's going to do it? I'd ask you, did God say, you know, creation, boy, that's a tough job. What if I get some fellas over here to help me create the universe? Of course not. And he's not looking for a handful of fellas to help him build a house and knock away the dome of the hoofy print. Yahweh will create, initiating something cutting edge upon every location and dwelling place. The world over? Nope.
No, in Jerusalem.
He could, but that's not what it says. That's an extrapolation.
Yes.
What is the most important place to go?
Mount Moriah on in Jerusalem.
Right.
Mount. Yeah.
Right. That's it. And we studied. We really took the time to determine that Zion, absolutely unequivocally, is that ridge line that begins at Dode's home and goes up to the summit of Mount Moriah, where Abraham and Yitzhak affirmed the covenant with Yahweh.
Yes.
Right below of which is where he established his home, the Temple Mount, on which he fulfilled Pesach, upon which he returned to fulfill Bukurim. That is the ridgeline of Zion, that he is going to build something extraordinary, create something extraordinary. And personally, I'm convinced that this sheltering canopy, this protective covering, this shield, this bridal chamber, this pavilion, this tent that's used for the wedding ceremony, this tupah, is light. I think it's the combination of two things. One is that it's brilliant light to the extent that we are just dazzled by it and all of its colors and brilliance and warmth. But also so that those who are still mortal aren't completely blown away by it. You know how when Yahweh spoke directly to his children early on in the Exodus.
Scared them to death.
Yeah. Oh, scared them to death.
Couldn't take it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Yahweh's going to have, there's going to be a remnant that's going to know them, that are going to be spared, but there are going to be some mortals and some of us who are spiritual beings during this time. And so I think what he's saying is you're going to be able to see it both ways. You're going to have it both ways. For those who are now spiritual beings, let the light shine. And for those who are mortal, yeah, it's going to be a cloud and some smoke along with
like
the brilliant, shiny radiance of majestic light.
Would it be like out in the wilderness?
Yeah, it's kind of like what they experienced in the wilderness as God leading them home. And what's really interesting is it says along the ridgeline of Zion, which we know that goes from Dode's home,
mm-hmm.
which is the home of the most important person who ever lived. And this goes on to describe this chapter, describe some of those words that will be upcoming. Mm-hmm. And we were talking before this program began, and your assessment is the same as my own.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important person I ever lived.
Yeah.
Yosef did what he had to do. He fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Lukot, and we know very little about him, other than what's foretold about him. And with Dod, he's one of us.
Yeah. He's one of us, and he was the head shepherd.
Yes, he's the head shepherd. He's the lead king.
Big honor.
He's Yahweh's favorite child.
Yeah.
And no one was the most or more prolific lyricist or songwriter.
Well, you know, you've made the point so many times, but I think it bears repeating, that we have absolutely nothing in Hebrew that's verifiable that Yosha ever said. His mission was not to leave psalms everywhere. Dod was. He was the voice that came through the line of the Yehudim from Jacob. And he fulfilled all the prophecies that were told by Jacob to his sons, to Yoda. He said,
you know, they talk about Yosha being the word of, you know, the word made flesh. That's kind of Yael Conan's translation of the Greek text. Well, the word made word, Dod. Now, the word made flesh, I can't see it. I can't touch it. I can't benefit from it.
That's right.
The word made word,
read it.
Can transform my life. Can transform everyone's life. Dod is the source. He's the one we should turn to, learn from, benefit from. His words were inspired by Yahweh, and we know what he had to say. So what this says is that there's going to be this transformation on the ridgeline known as Zion, which is the ridgeline of Mount Moriah, which is the one place that God is singularly focused, and it's going to be a celebration of family from the home of the person Yahweh loves most of all, Dod, the family home connected to Yahweh's home. And you know what's also interesting? The thing that's going to make the connection, the signs that are posted along the way, they are the Mikrah.
Oh, it's the Mikrah. Of
Zion, as well as her Mikrah. The signs are the Mikrah. They are the signs on the path to God. They are the steps on the path to God. There are six steps that lead from our world, the home of Dod, if you will, to God's world.
Yes.
Six steps. The seventh, being Sukkah, camping out with Yahweh.
Makes it perfect.
Here they are unified. They're one and the same. Zion, the Mikra, Moriah. The path to the covenant, the means to have a relationship with God. They're all the same. Pesach means to immortality. Matzah, the means to perfection. Salvation, if you will, to being tzedak. Right. Bukurim, being adopted into God's covenant family. Shabuah, to be enriched, to be empowered, so as to be able to live life in the seventh dimension. To be able to explore with the creator of the universe, throughout the universe. Teruah. To care enough about that message to share it.
Yeah.
To be similar enough to Yahweh to express righteous indignation against religion. Kaputam, because nothing is more important than us doing what we're doing, which is conveying this message so that there is indeed a reconciliation, a reaffirmation of the covenant, a coming home for Yisrael and Yehuda. Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliations. Those six steps leading to the top of Zion, to the top of Moriah, to the conclusion of the Mikra, to Sukkah. I can't be now with God. Sukha is the chupa. It is the sheltering canopy. That's why this statement ends with that. Thus, the manifestation of power and the glory, the kabod of Yahweh, is enjoyed at chupa, at sukha. Living with God. Yeah, in his brilliant canopy. If you know who he is, if your perspective is right, if your attitude towards Yahweh is right, a statement like this, Yahshayah 4:5, affirms what you know, provides perspective on what you ought to expect, underscores Yahweh's nature, points us in the right direction, encourages us. There's just so much to benefit in such a statement as Yahshayah 4:5.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about this as I've been doing these last few, you know, doing some translating on these last group as well. And when you come across a statement like 4:5 and it says, "Then Yahweh we create," and then you go on to Mount Zion, Shion, and then you have the word Mikra all the way down through Chupa, you could screw this up. Unless you absolutely are trying to, you cannot miss it. There's no such thing as a first-year student, I would say, in any of those colleges that couldn't put this together and say, well, this is either wrong or it's no longer worthwhile. They'll use that kind of analogy. But this is what he said, and he's so clear. It just defies logic.
Kurt, you are affirming something that I've held true and that I think is important, which underscores something that I hinted at earlier. If you approach Yahweh's testimony with an open mind, if you're rational, if you genuinely seek to know, there really is no way to screw this up. These definitions are really clear.
Yes.
The message he is conveying is profound, it is brilliant, it is consistent, it is liberating, it is empowering, it is enlightening, and it's not difficult. There is no part of this that is difficult. And so we don't have to be someone special. We don't have to be uniquely gifted or brilliant. All we had to do is be willing. And anyone who is willing, open-minded, rational, will find exactly what we found. And to screw it up, you have to either not care or be deliberately manipulative. It's right there, isn't it? It's obvious.
It's staggeringly in your face. I mean, sometimes I say, Kirk, be real careful. We're not trying to read in something into it or write something into it that's not there. It's not even, I'm stunned all the time that it just keeps popping out. I'm saying, well, that can't be any other way. Go to 12 lexicons if you like. I use 7.
Right. Right.
And they all agree that that's what the Mikra are. They all agree that's what Zion is, and that's what Mount Moriah is, and this is what Chupa means. I mean, I've got everything that says in Chupa from about 7 different sources. It's all, you know. Come on. You have to be a criminal and turn this around. And then find some dupe that won't look it up.
So it's no wonder that Yahweh said how frustrated he was when no one was at the door, when he looked for someone to convey his message and no one was, you could find no one. Because this wasn't hard. The benefits are astronomical. The benefits are beyond our comprehension. What little is asked of us is all in our best interest. You know, it's like saying to a parent, saying, brush your teeth before you go to bed. Well, that's in your best interest. Each of the 5 things that Yahweh asks of us are all in our best interest. Each of the parties he invites us to, We're the guest.
Yeah. He's the
for fun. And to do all of that and offer all of that and expect so little in return and have no one for 2,700 years even be willing to engage. And yet you had, over that time, millions and millions of people eager to lead people astray. Then there will exist a temporary sheltered dwelling to camp out for shade, T-S-E-L, sel, to create a shadow, to provide protection, addressing the idea of interposing something between an object and the source of the light, serving as a restoring transition by day. From the drying heat to Choreb. Choreb, of course, is the mount that Yahweh revealed his Torah. Mm-hmm. And for a safe place, place that is protected, for this shelter of refuge, place to dwell safely, to be concealed from the outpouring floodwaters and from the rain. So there's going to exist a sukkah. Well, yeah, isn't that the whole point? That Yahweh is doing all of this so that we can celebrate sukkah together? So there will exist a sukkah. Wahaya sukkah. And now there exists sukkah. I've created, established, I've created something that's just extraordinarily new and marvelous and wonderful on Zion to illuminate the mikre between Dod's house and mine. And now, sukkah. So again, if you're just looking at the words and you take time to say, okay, I'm not in a hurry. Let's just pause right there. Take a moment to let that sink in. Yahweh is reestablishing the most important place on earth, transforming it so that it's this brilliant scene of light from Dod's house right up to his home on the ridgeline of Moriah, Zion, in coordination with the Mikra. And now he says, and there will exist sukkah. Yeah, there will. For 1,000 earth years. Sukkah. A place and time to camp out. For to settle. For to sell. For the likeness. For the likeness. Now we're gonna dwell on to sell. Well, we're going to consider that word because that's the first word after sukkah is to sell. It says there's something special about what's happening here. And didn't Yahweh create Adam and Chawa in his image? Male and female, he created them in his image. He created them to sell.
Yes, indeed.
So is not sukkah then for thee to sell, for those who were created in his image.
Correct.
Yeah. By day, yom. And protecting them from the drying heat, the chorab. Protecting them. By day. In fact, there's another way you could write these, this, because yom, mem. It could be that there will exist a sukkah for the tesel to approach. La means to approach. For the tesel, those in the image of Yahweh to create, to approach. Those in the image of Yahweh to approach by day during this time because of Torah. Mem can mean from, out of, or because of. In fact, I much prefer the rendering, there will exist sukkah for those in the image of God to approach by day as a result of Torah. Because the moment we lose sight of what happened on Torah, we lose our entire perspective of the story. Yahweh's nature, the path to him, was all revealed on Chorib. Chorib is the place that Yahweh offered his Torah, his teaching and guidance. So because of his teaching and guidance, those conceived in his image can approach because of the existence of Sukkah. And you know what's interesting is that Chorib, the meaning of Chorib, it's evaporation caused by a flame. It's drying heat. You know, I used the concept of fire earlier. Fire is the source of a crucible. What happens at a crucible? The dross is separated from that, which is valuable.
Right?
Metals,
yes. Separated.
Right. If you are an energy-based being, if you are transformed into spirit, if you become like light, then is more light going to be a problem for you? No, but what happens if you're mortal and you're...
It'll destroy you.
Right, exposed to that kind of heat, you're destroyed. So again, it's a separating thing. This is going to be a safe place. It's a shelter. And from the outpouring of floodwaters, why are there floodwaters? Because Yahweh's got to cleanse the earth. Man's made such a polluted mess of it. It's not just his rubbish, the worst rubbish of all, religious, military, and political buildings. And
well, plus, you're going to have water to turn into the garden as well. Clean up the salty waters. Oh, yeah. All of your
we're going to replenish the Dead Sea. It's not going to be dead anymore.
Right.
Now, all of that's going to be true. Outpouring of the flood riders. And you know, there was a time where Yahweh used a deluge to separate 8 special people in an ark from the rest of those within the Soma. Wouldn't he be consistent to use floodwaters again to take the remnant of those who have chosen to establish a relationship with him and to separate them and keep them safe?
Sure.
While their others are washed away and the earth is cleansed of their presence.
Well, he's going to do that across the board. If you think about Apophis, it's not any different than the asteroid that hit the bottom of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula that started the thing in Noah's day. So, the parallels are obvious.
So, we've discussed the importance of Tzel. You can simply render its shadow and lose the reason it was used here. Tzel is the root of Teslim, which is the word that Yahweh used in Bereshit 1:26 and 27 to reveal that Adam had been made in the image or likeness, the pattern or model of Yahweh. He was Teslim, a lesser dimensional representation of something greater. We are a lesser dimensional representation of our Creator. We're in his image and his likeness in fewer dimensions. That's why this word was used here.
When I was looking at all this, I agree with you. That's exactly what you'll find. But also, I keep going back to something that occurred to me that Adam... And I talked to other people about this, and I said, Adam is, because he's unique in that he has a nesoma, Yahweh couldn't have a relationship with the other humans or previous man-like people that animals existed on the earth. He had to have, and by marrying into some of Adam's descendants, we obviously can see that that produced enough horror to cause the... him to only save 8 people later, so that's not the solution. But the only person he could, Adam and Chawa had an assault of, until you're able to be judgmental, decide what's good and what's bad, to hate that which is raw, as opposed to told, he can't have a relationship with you, because you have to be able to make a choice, and they could not really make a choice. So those were creatures like all the other creatures he made that were beautiful and wonderful, they were animals and wonderful. But Adam is the most unique individual. It's just amazing. because he has that one terrific characteristic that he can decide right from wrong. So when he's talking about his image, I think he's talking about as much of that as the image inside him, what he's able to do, how he's able to think, as much as...
When you're talking about dimensional representations, the only chance that we really have to have an appreciation of this is to look down rather than up.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a few of us. I'm not sure I would include myself fully in this group, but certainly Einstein was among those who understood time as a dimension and could look up and see a dimension beyond us. And I have some appreciation of it, and the more I study Hebrew, the more I study God's Word, I have an appreciation of what it's like to be, to exist in the fullness of time.
Mm-hmm.
But to go beyond even a passable understanding of four dimensions to five, six, and seven is way beyond my comprehension. But I get a feeling of the infinite difference between two and three dimensions. It helps me appreciate the infinite difference between being three-dimensional and being four. And how there's an infinite difference between four and five. An infinite difference between five and six. And, of course, to go from six to seven, there's an infinite delta between those two. And we have an appreciation of that by looking at cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm.
Drawn with an implement on a flat piece of paper or on film. There is no way for, if now life can't exist in 2D, life requires three dimensions to exist. But if those cartoon characters were actually alive, if they had the ability to be observant, they'd respond to their environment, they could not even imagine the three-dimensional being that they created. They couldn't see that being. They couldn't interact with that being. That being could interact with them, but they would have no way of having any appreciation for the nature of that being, other than what that being might tell them about himself, because that the three-dimensional being cannot enter flatland. It's impossible.
Hmm.
And a two-dimensional being is literally doesn't even exist in three dimensions. It is really, I think it gives you this concept of how if you were in flatland as 2D, you could not imagine another dimension intersecting your dimensions at a right angle, could you?
No. No, the whole thing would be absurd. I mean, unless you really wanted to joke around and say, okay, I could draw a diminished character in two dimensions in a cartoon. You know, that, because the other cartoon's not real, but let's assume it had, because it's 2D, it doesn't exist. So let's just pretend it was for a minute. You could put a diminished representation with your words in it to talk to that person. And that's basically what he did with us. You know, so, but that's, you can't do it, but he could do it with us in 3D from where he is. Because otherwise we wouldn't have to, they were a Kodesh. That's how the Malach, are they? Or Yosha, the Kodesh Kodesh.
Yep.
So, but can you really understand this stuff? I can't.
No.
I couldn't. My math wouldn't even scratch the surface.
But while I can't, and you can't fully appreciate seven dimensions, we are capable of extrapolating down from three to two, and therefore up from three to four. And have an appreciation for how magnificent things will be as seven dimensions, and how just being liberated in the fourth dimension makes the entire universe accessible to us. Mm-hmm. And while we are trapped in three as a physical being, none of the universe, except this tiny little planet, are available to us. And liberated in four dimensions, the entire universe is available to us. So if you extrapolate beyond that to five, six, and seven, you know, you get a feel for just what Yahweh is offering us when he says, I'm going to enrich you and empower you. And at this moment, of course, at celebrating Sukkah, those in his likeness, based upon what transpired on Chorab, are celebrating with him. So let's look at Tisal here, and Tisalim. And God said, let us produce the man Adam in our image, resemblance, pattern, and model, after our likeness. So God created for association Adam in his own image. In the image of the Almighty, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Now, there's subtlety here. There's two subtleties here that I did. Maybe more than that, but there's some things that I really want to convey.
Okay.
First of all, Yahweh used our, and then he used him. Right?
Yes.
We have a tough time with that. Is Yahweh singular or plural? Our is plural. Him is singular. Male and female in our image means that he has maternal and maternal characteristics. Him,
I'm putting that, yes.
Yeah, is masculine.
Yes.
Paternal. So what Yahweh was saying is he can be one and possess male and female characteristics.
All right.
Father and mother, set apart spirit and heavenly father, and still be one.
Right.
And that's what he's conveying here by our and him. You know, it's a dualistic nature within a singular being. It's a being that isn't limited by gender, although has a preference in gender. It's kind of the way that I would say that, and that's really important too. So what Yahweh was saying is that he has a male and female nature. That's why it's our. That's why male and female, he created them in our image, he created them. That he has male and female characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the essential maleness is what comes through at the end. That is, that he wants to relate to us mostly as our Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father. Right.
Right. So he wants to relate to us as our Heavenly Father, even though he embraces, encapsulated within his nature are both Father and Mother. So all of that has been conveyed in a simple statement. And that Tesalim would suggest that we are just a lesser dimensional representation of God. It's like the plans. Have you ever looked at blueprints for a home?
Absolutely. I can draw. In fact, when we had this conversation or something about this conversation not too long ago, I got out my old perspective book and I reviewed how to take a floor plan, a blueprint, and turn it into a three-dimensional rendering.
There you go.
Which I can do. It's painful for me. It takes a long time, but I can do it. I understand the concept, what I'm supposed to do to do that. And I thought about this. Well, I said, you know, that's what you do.
Two-dimensional
turning into a three-dimensional thing, even though it's still in a 2D form, but it's just creating a 3D.
But the plans for a home are a two-dimensional representation of a three-dimensional structure.
Yeah, exactly.
They have elevations, which are two dimensions. They have floor plans, which are two dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those two dimensions, when properly derived from those plans, create a three-dimensional structure.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to say. You know, it's like, let's diminish Yahweh to three dimensions and put us in two, and he says, I'm three, you're two, I'm going to make you just like me, and two, just less of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the difference between the concept between a drop of water and the ocean. It's the difference between E and M, and E equals MC squared. Matter and light are the same thing, they're just not the same amount of the same thing. Right,
yeah.
It's a quantity thing. Teslam is the blueprint for the home, but it's not the same scale as the home. It's 2D rather than 3D. So that's what God is saying here. We are just like him, we're just not the same amount as he is.
Yeah.
He is greater in every dimension than we are. But yet,
well, you could even say, correct me if I'm off beat here, but you could even say that there's a connection there between his word is his word, but his letters that he chose to write, not the ones that we use, but the ones that he chose to write with, or a diminished thing that represents those same things. Whereas our words just make sound. Our letters just make sound.
Right.
It actually mean something.
Let's go. Let's go one step further. So the letters and the jots and tittles in Hebrew, the jots and tittles in Hebrew are blueprints for the words that they convey.
The blueprints for the word, yeah. So that's,
right.
That's a good
The words are the three dimensional. The words are the house.
Exactly.
The letters that comprise the words are the blueprints for them.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go one step further. The words are a dimensional manifestation, a lesser dimensional manifestation of Yahweh himself.
Mm-hmm.
The words are the blueprint.
And Yahweh are the same.
Right. To Yahweh's nature.
Mm-hmm.
The words are the blueprint describing Yahweh's nature. The words are the blueprint to the path we follow to engage with him. The words are the blueprint. The letters are the blueprints to the words. The words are the blueprint for Yahweh. You want to see God? Look at the blueprint.
Look at the words.
Look at his words.
Yeah.
His words are the blueprint. His words in our realm. And I want to tell you that words, when properly understood, are greater than three dimensions.
Mm-hmm. Because they can exist out of three dimensions.
And not only can they exist out of three dimensions, and not only can they enter three dimensions, but they exist in a way in our mind that creates images and pictures and understanding and perspective. They're much more powerful, much more expansive, much more enlightening than anything that's limited to 3D. And in Hebrew, of course, every word is automatically 4D. Because they're unlimited in time, liberated in time.
Mm-hmm.
So every word in Hebrew is already 4D, a dimension beyond us. So God explained how we were created and how, and has now revealed what we will become. Well, it may not seem like much to grow from three dimensions to seven. Each step along the way represents an infinite increase in capability. You know, just as we discussed, three dimensions are infinitely greater than two. The transition from three dimensions to seven is infinity to the fourth power. That may not get your attention or sound impressive, but the immense power of an atomic bomb is predicated merely on E equals MC squared, with the speed of light being the finite number to which matter is multiplied to equal an equivalent amount of energy, the square of the speed of light. That said, for the scientists and mathematicians among us, I acknowledge that I'm using the word infinity too loosely. In reality, infinity is not any number. It is a progression towards an ever greater number without ceasing. By that definition, putting a power onto something that is growing without end isn't something which can be calculated. Therefore, to infer that a calculated outcome, we should instead assign a very large number, no matter how large, but still finite, to each dimensional change. Under that perspective, we can use I to the fourth to convey the overall increase. This isn't an unreasonable approach.
No.
Because when infinity is used colloquially, we generally mean an unimaginably large number. All right, now that Yahweh has returned our attention to this topic, to better appreciate our place relative to God and His creation, I'd like to turn to something that I find important to the Mizmor, the Psalms. Psalm 8, 5 through 8. Now here Yahweh inspired his son Dod to write these words. Indeed, he, surely. I have examined and considered, Ra'ah. I have viewed and sought to understand. I have observed and thought about. I have used the perception of sight to make judgments based upon what has been revealed. I have attained the proper perspective regarding your universe and spiritual realm, Shamaim. It's the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars. They show the way to what you have fashioned and formed, to that which is upright. What is mortal man that you are mindful of him? Even the son of Adam, you actually and continually choose to acknowledge him. You have somewhat deprived him of the dimensions compared to the Almighty. And yet, with a significant presence, as well as with the best qualities, you have honored him. You've spoken proverbs to him, shared relevant examples and insightful stories regarding the works of your hands. Everything you have placed under his feet. Wow. I just get goosebumps when I read Dod's lyrics. Okay, that's really good stuff. So Dod's doing what Yahweh wants us to do the most. He's thinking. Indeed, I have examined and considered. And it's not just thinking, it's thinking from the proper perspective. I don't think there's anything more important to convey to people than if you want to understand God, you've got to have the proper perspective. And you're not going to see him if your perspective is religion. You're not going to see him if your perspective is to be patriotic or political.
Yeah.
You've got to look the other way. You know, perspective, Kirk, if you're drawing perspective on canvas because you want to give people a sense of the dimensionality of the two-dimensional realm that you've created, the perspective is only from one perspective, right? It's not going to look like what you're showing from the opposite view, is it?
Oh, no.
If somebody was 90 degrees perpendicular to the perspective that you have drawn this to be viewed, it won't look that way, will it?
No, it'll actually distort.
Right? Perspective. Do you want to understand the picture that God's painting? Perspective. Which is absolutely essential. Indeed, I have obtained the proper perspective and examined and considered your universe and the spiritual realm, the Shamayim. And the more you consider it, the closer you really come to understanding God. The importance of light and time, the immensity of it, the fact that it so far exceeds even our wildest imaginations, and yet we haven't the capacity to even go from this solar system to the next. We don't even have the capacity to go to the next planet in our own solar system. And so he is, from the proper perspective, he's looking at this universe. And he's not even at the moment considering life, which is the most profound thing in the universe. And he said, okay. The enormity of this tells me something that's really important about God. Particularly when I look at the Shabbaim, because of all the light and the points of light that are out there. It's the work of your hands. The moon and the stars show the way to what you have fashioned and formed. That's interesting that he didn't say the sun and the moon. The moon and the stars. Okay, I want to interpret something here.
A sidebar? Okay.
What is the, what is the micro based on the timing of the micro?
It's always in the moon.
What is the root of when Yahweh is using the moon to time his mikra? What's the word that he uses? Kodesh.
Oh, Kodesh. Yeah, okay.
Kodesh. Yeah. Means to renew, doesn't it?
Yes, renew.
Renewal. Kodesh. Now here he's using the actual term for moon, as opposed to the term that is used to describe, he's using Yarek.
Mm-hmm. Yarek. Mm-hmm.
The term which means to renew, but it is the moon and the light that begins to fill the surface of the moon, to radiate from the surface of the moon, that is used to establish the timing of the mikra.
Right.
And the stars. Where did Yahweh take Abraham? So that Abraham finally understood what Yahweh was offering him as inheritance.
Well, he took him up on the mountain to look at the stars.
That's he not only took him up on the mountain to look at the stars. He took him to the stars.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, well, yes.
Yeah, he took him to the Kohab, the stars. So the stars are what represents this transformation from mortal to immortal, from matter to light, and the immensity of it all, and the power of it all, and the enlightenment of it all that Yahweh was offering us. So it's the moon that established the timing of the Mikra, and the stars which establish. And then he says, so what is mortal man in the midst of all of this?
That's a fair question.
Why are you mindful of him? A son of Adam? That you actually and continually choose to acknowledge him? Isn't that a question we should all be asking?
Well,
I would not care about
it. Unless you're some strange person, you'd have to think, whoa, why?
And by the way, he didn't use... What is mankind here?
No.
He's a son of Adam.
Right.
He is not thinking about the preponderance of the of humanity.
No,
he's not thinking
Enoch
about...
Enoch is always a family descendant.
Right. He's not even talking about Israel here, much less the civilizations that surrounded her.
Mm-hmm.
He says, why are you mindful of a son of Adam, that you actually continually choose to acknowledge him? Did Yahweh acknowledge anybody at this time other than Dote?
No, he's certainly talking in the first person.
Right. This is Dote asking, because it's a rhetorical question.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the answer. But this is Dote saying, Yahweh, you are continually choosing to acknowledge me, and I'm just one of the many sons of Adam. But just as a son of Adam, what is it that would cause you to be mindful, to consider, to acknowledge, to relate to this son of Adam, to me? And the answer to that question, Dode knew, and the answer to that question, the most important answer in the universe.
Well, number one, he got it.
Because for God to be infinite, he must grow.
Yeah.
And the only way for God to grow is through genuine relationships. Otherwise, we wither and die.
And we're back to Asher.
See, so there's nothing God wants more than to have a family relationship. He wants to have a son. And not just one. Many. Why he created the universe. It's why he works so hard to lift us up, works so hard to empower us, to enrich us. He's not looking for us to serve him. And that's what Dode wasn't looking at. You know, why are you giving me the opportunity to serve you? No. Dode's got the perspective right. He realizes that Yahweh is there, acknowledging him, caring about him, supporting him, considering him, that Yahweh is there for him.
Well, you know, he was interesting. He chose the word zikar, which is a lot more than just being mindful of him. It's like memorialized. You know, someone that you recall and reflect upon. He's saying, why are you so seriously
interested in me? Zikar is the word that is used throughout the Torah prophets and Psalms. In fact, Yahweh uses Zikar. He says, Yahweh is my name. It's the only name, Zikar, I want to be known as, to be considered as. Zikar. There are places where Yahweh uses Zikar, for example, in circumcision. He says, the purpose of circumcision is so that you, Zikar, you remember, you're mindful, you memorialize. Yeah, Zikar is, Yahweh uses Zikar regarding himself often. And now Dode is turning around and said, okay, yeah, it's one thing for me to remember you, but you Zikar me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a powerful point. You have somewhat deprived him of the dimensions, Wa, Cheser, Hu, Ma'at. You withheld a little from him as it relates to something which is needed, thus pertaining to a relatively lower dimensional position. Yeah, he got it.
Yeah.
Dode came to the same conclusion we have come to. He just came to it 3,000 years ago. We were talking, Kirk, you and I, before the show began, and saying, okay, so Dode's insights are mind-bogglingly brilliant. And what did he have to work with? The lowly shepherd. I mean, all he had access to, would have had access to, had been through Samuel, who liked him.
Yes.
So Samuel would have shared what he had. But really, all he had maybe was some of the texts where he could read some of the texts of Samuel.
Yeah.
But we have the Torah in multicolor.
Yeah, we got problems.
I mean, I must have 10 interlinears, and maybe that's an exaggeration. I have 5 interlinears. I'm using probably 15 different lexicons.
Mm-hmm.
I've got grammatical tools. I've got the Dead Sea Scrolls. I've got the Masoretic. I mean, I've got at my fingertips so many powerful tools. And what did Dode have? Great old scroll that was being carried around by Samuel. Some insights that Samuel could provide him along the way. And yet he figured it out. And he figured out about that Yahweh had made him a lesser dimensional being even before there would have been any concept of time being a dimension or the universe being beyond the three that we can perceive.
That's true.
That's a guy with all his little synapses and neurons in the brain. Man, they're making connections. Everything's working, man. That makes me feel like just the ultimate dunderhead. I don't know about you. But that's not sure.
Yeah, it's insignificant compared.
No, it doesn't. You know, it actually makes me feel like
I can read what he had and get it.
3,000 years ago, Dode was inspired to recognize that we are a dimensional manifestation of Yahweh in lesser dimensions.
Yes.
As was Yosha, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We came to the same conclusion, one now affirmed. That's pretty special. That we came to the same conclusion that Dode did. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, guess what? We're right.
Right.
Yeah. If the conclusion we came to is affirmed by Dode, well, that's the wrong way of saying it.
Sounds pretty solid, right?
If the conclusion we came to is consistent with the conclusion Dode came too. And we're right.
Mm-hmm.
Because Yahweh says
he was right.
Yeah. Tzedakah.
So he's right.
He's right. Man, that dude, he's my son, and he's right. Isn't that something? You have somewhat deprived him, and being deprived here is important, because if every human had been made six-dimensional, or even if every human, in fact, Yahweh kind of toyed with the humans being almost four-dimensional, because they were living for 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right? So,
when
he had lots and lots of time, not 70 years, but 1,000 years, then we really made a mess of things. So, man elevated to the fourth dimension, most are rascals, terrible, horrible, deadly, poisonous. And so, Yahweh had to be really careful. He had to limit man so that those who are limited, if they sought out the source of unlimited, would be transformed from limited to unlimited. They would receive the benefits of Pesach, Matzah, and Bikkurim. And that which is what Dode is teruim, is that, we were made in a lesser dimension. We're the blueprints of Yahweh. And he knows how to transform that blueprint into an individual that is absolutely equivalent to him. Stunning. You have somewhat deprived him of dimensions compared to the Almighty himself. And yet with a significant presence, as well as with the best qualities, you've honored him. What's the single best quality that a man can have in this Alma?
Yeah, I would like him. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. What's the next best quality? Right. So a conscience would be the best quality. The second best quality would be a consciousness, the ability to observe and respond.
Respond appropriately.
And with those two things, we have a mind that is beyond any other animal. Anything we know in the universe, there's nothing superior to the human mind and what it can do. And there's nothing anywhere equivalent in all of creation to our ability to communicate with the spoken and the written word. The power of communicating with the spoken and written word, and the power of being transformed by the spoken and written word, to know based upon the spoken and written word, and to understand, actually to think with the spoken and written word. A marvelous quality. He had made man upright, the only being that is upright, animal. The only being that creates a home as we do, mother and father, husband and wife, with children and raising them in this kind of a home. There's no other animal like that. So we've been honored to have been conceived in Yahweh's nature. And then Dode says, this is so profound. And this is really what I think, how Dode became so brilliant. He spoke in Proverbs to him.
Right.
Now, this is also something that resonates with me, because I'm convinced that Dode wrote most all of the Mashal, the Proverbs. Mm-hmm. You have spoken Proverbs to him. Well, Yahweh spoke Proverbs to Dode, who is the author of those Proverbs that we read?
Mm-hmm.
Dode. Regarding the works of your hand. Who, if you look at the Proverbs, almost all the Proverbs are written as a father and a mother to a child, right?
Yes.
That's how they're all written. Father and mother to a child. They were conveyed by Yahweh our Heavenly Father, to his favorite son, Dode, so that we too could become the children of God. You've spoken proverbs to him regarding the works of your hands. Everything you have placed under his feet, everything we need to know, is derived from those proverbs that Yahweh inspired Dode to write. They explain what Yahweh has done and is doing on our behalf. Everything. He's thrown out at our feet so that we can walk to him. We can stand before him. I'd like to return to this next week, Kirk, because...
It's really powerful stuff, Marshall Long is a word is terrific, but you know when you look up a lot of these interlinearies and all in the translations, they really want to say something to the fact that you've made him to rule and reign and dominate and regulate and control over, as opposed to a Marshall is a proverb, parable, story comparisons, ability, you know, it's not that. It's an either or thing, and it obviously is not the former. It's the latter. And then if you look at the words and the letters, it teaches the same story. So, yeah, I'd love to come back to it next week. Absolutely. Good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is really good.
It's just brilliant.
One thing I wanted to add that I thought of while we were talking, I'm still blown away when you did that research on the mountains and on the mount in Jerusalem, and there's that land up there that no one's ever built anything on. That's still freaking me out.
I've been the 777 steps.
Going to 777.
No, everything is either 700 strides or 700. And what you come to realize that if you start looking and using human dimensions, forget it. But if you use, not the metric system or the English system, but in fact the stride of a man. Which is, everything is about walking to God along that path line, that the ridge line of Zion with the signs along the road, which are the Mikre. And you realize that everything is multiples of 777 steps from one place to another.
It all have 77 words.
Yeah, and the elevations and all of it.
Wow.
Yeah, and then to just have an appreciation that Zion is not a separate mountain, coterminous with Moriah, but it includes more of Moriah, and that it's that ridge line of Moriah that begins at Dode's home and goes all the way up to the top. Past the Temple Mount to the place where Abraham and Yitzhak affirmed the covenant, the very place that Yahweh was going to build Bara, his home, out of light.
How powerful.
Yes,
you think is something lesser than? I don't think so. This is he's the real deal.
I am absolutely convinced, and I don't think that there's even a question here.
No.
That Dode is the single most important person who ever lived. Yeah. It's truly amazing to me that people can't figure it out. I mean, did he say that to anybody else?
No.
When he said, he's my son and I'm his father, did he say that to anybody else?
No, sir. Not in print.
So no.
There you have it.
Right.
No.
And even the truncated the line that was supposedly said by a dove passing by in the Ardan, and that we only have a copy of in Greek, it's only half of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh just makes an announcement. He is my son. I am his father. We all want. And Does when Yahweh returns, does he say, I want to establish the kingdom of Yosha?
Kingdom of, no.
No.
It's always the kingdom of Dode.
So how could Yosha be more important than Dode? If Yahweh is going to create the kingdom of Dode when he returns, David. It's so clear.
No, it's working through this man.
You have thousands of words that provide these brilliant insights from Dode, and we don't have a single word in the language Yosha spoke maintained for us in a credible fashion today.
Obviously, that wasn't the plan.
Obviously, it wasn't the plan.
Dode.
Yes. I mean, Yosha is extraordinarily important. Yahweh saving us, extremely important to the branch of the Tree of Lives.
Well,
and to understand how Yahweh did this for us, extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that brings up one other point, that everywhere Yosha went, he said, go back to the Torah, as he said to the guy who was not named Nicodemus, go back to the Torah, read it. Everywhere mm-hmm. Yosha pointed to Yahweh. He keeps pointing to Yahweh, and he talks about the written word. Always go there. And what are you going to find there? Most of the writings of Dode.
Right.
So he, who's pointing to whom?
Yes.
The Torah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, listen, it's unequivocal.
Yep.
This is... This is great stuff.
Yes. Well, let's return to this a week from today, my friend.
All right, sir. I appreciate it.
All right.
Will do.
Okay.
And
good night.
Shalom, shalom. Good luck with your puppy.
Yeah, thank you.